For over 100 years, Jones Topsoil has been part of your community, delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. Slinger Jones, bringing it home to you. Whether you're planting a vibrant flower bed, growing your own vegetables, or giving your lawn a fresh start, be the envy of the neighborhood with topsoil and mulch from Slinger Jones. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at jonestopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.
Welcome back to Evolution of Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And we are back with another riveting episode of Sister Songs. This is our series where we take a bunch of different songs from many different points of time in Taylor Swift's discography, and we do our very own Snake version of Meth Math.
And you know what? I enjoy Meth Math. I feel like on Evolution of a Snake, we always talk about Meth Math in a negative connotation, but there's a really enjoyable degree of Meth Math that can be done. And our favorite kind of Meth Math is definitely lyrical Meth Math. We like to go in and find the sort of like relationships between songs from all across Taylor's discography. And how lucky are we that she has 12 entire albums for us to do this crazy Meth Math on,
and 12 brand new songs for us to bring into the fold. I think usually we focus on moodier parts of Taylor's discography for sister songs just because they tend to be more ripe for analysis. But today we decided that we were going to hand heart and clap and cheer. But then when I went in to actually do the math, I was like, it really isn't all clapping and cheering. There's some serious stuff. There's some serious stuff to unpack here. But we are looking at Taylor's approach to writing songs about being in love, like actively being in love, writing basically to the object of her affection. And we are starting with Ours, which is on Speak Now in 2010. Then we skip all the way forward to Daylight, 2019, Lover. And then we get into our newest entry into the I Love My Boyfriend canon, which is, of course, the runaway hit from Life of a Showgirl, Opalite, Madeline's claimed track.
Yes. And as everybody knows, this is like my lore. Every time I claim a track from a track list before an album comes out, it's never my favorite. It's never one I hate. I will say that. It's just never the one that actually winds up being my favorite. It's always like a middling song to me. And I would definitely say Opalite is like, I like it. She's cute, but not my favorite. And that's okay. But it's my curse.
You know what? I was kind of clairvoyant this album release season, I realized. And last, too. I said for Torture Poets, I claimed But Daddy, I Love Him. Correct. And for this one, I claimed Elizabeth Taylor. And I was correct about that. And I also said the song that I was going to hate was going to be Wood.
And yes, that was clocked. That was definitely clocked. I said I was going to hate Wishlist, and yet she has a strange power over me.
Oh, she is a pull. No, she has a pull. It's really like sick.
There's sick. Something sinister and evil about
Bust
like the
up,
degree.
Settled down.
I'm like, oh.
And it's nonsense. It's song is nonsense.
And I'm playing it. And I'm streaming
have
it.
Have a cup
my
of kids.
Part,
got the whole, like,
we
I can't.
Tell the world to leave us the fuck alone, and they do.
Sometimes you just are wonderstruck, blushing all the way home.
Hmm? I was, but nonetheless.
I am.
Damn. That's a good shirt. We're kind of matching. Almost.
Well,
purple, purple.
Yeah, we are. Oh, purple, purple. Well,
doesn't
that's because we started with Speak Now.
It really
does not
a lot.
Clashing more likely than you think. But I guess I'll start with my little introduction spiel that I meth-mathed out. So my whole thing was kind of like, we've seen Taylor's heartbroken in so many different shades. We've seen Jilted Woman, Scarlet Letter, Getaway Car Passenger. But her perspective of love written from the inside, when it's contemporaneous with the love that she feels at the time of an album's release, I think that's quite important. This was not the case for Ours, let it be known. Let it be known. This is a fairly limited thing to draw from in her discography. And while all of these songs we picked today have in common is that they represent love conquering circumstance to me. despite whatever strife or conflict or tension is being described in these songs, the power of love has usurped it or is trying to usurp it. And to me, the progression of these songs is like a loosening of her grip on love, because now she's clearly in love with someone who makes her feel loved unconditionally. She's not in love with this muse because of what he's done for her or in spite of what he's done to her. They have chosen each other, and that brings a sense of peace I don't think we really see elsewhere in her discography. And there's a tendency, I think, a lot of times to compare Showgirl to Lover as being her In Love albums. But there is a levity and also a mundanity to Showgirl that doesn't exist on Lover, presumably because this state of her being in love, feeling it and experiencing it, is not like full of conflict. She doesn't feel as though it might disappear at any moment, which is the tension, I think, that runs through Lover and what makes it kind of a more dynamic album. It makes Showgirl less interesting than Lover, but the songs that we picked here, specifically Opalite, I think signal a direction that we're headed in that is new territory, being truly in love with her lover, unafraid of him turning on her or bailing on her because of her life's circumstances. That's a beautiful thing.
It's an absolutely beautiful thing. Don't we love love?
Don't we give it all we've got?
Don't we give it all we got? I'm asking you, really.
It's just a question. It's just a question.
So I'll give my spiel. My spiel is pretty similar to yours, but I said the thing that all of these songs have in common, first of all, I said they represent love as a metaphorical parting of the clouds. It's like a kind of magical thing that makes everything happy and everything feels light and good. And there's this idea of like somehow, some way, love will save us. But there's also something that all three of these songs have that I thought was kind of like the secret dark side, which is that all of these songs contain some iteration of an us versus them. Taylor loves to do us versus them when it comes to her relationships. She really likes to kind of like put her and her paramours in like a romantic partners, I should say, in a fishbowl. And like the outside world is like banging on it and like, we're going to get you. We're going to break you up. And it's not really hard to understand why she feels that way. People have time and time again either attempted or successfully blown her relationships up. Outside forces such as other people cheating or tabloids, rumors. I mean, these things have actually sunk her relationships before. So she's lost a lot of relationships due to her fame as well. So many people are talking about them, succumbing to the pressure of being under that heavy of a magnifying glass. She really does kind of see her relationships as kind of like a fight. And like, obviously, she's always the protagonist with her boyfriend and the outside world is always the antagonist. So even though like these songs are happy-go-lucky, there is like an invisible antagonist that she writes about. And these aren't the only songs where she does that either. She likes opposing forces. She likes the idea that like we're the heroes and like there's enemies out there. It only makes the songs more interesting. Like take Love Story, for example. That's an entire song about like the Capulets and the Montagues and like turning that on its head. Yes, but it's about opposing forces. You can understand why she feels that way. It's not unfounded.
She's obsessed with her haters, that's for sure. This is something that we 100% learned on Showgirl. It's like the haters are everywhere. Even when nobody else knows where they are, they're everywhere. And that is something, the hater can be anything. The hater can be her own father. The hater
and it
can
often
be
is.
Her own father.
It often
it
is.
Especially in these early songs. I mean, even on But Daddy, I Love Him, she kind of let it slip. Even My Daddy Just Loves Him.
And you know what's so funny about But Daddy, I Love Him is that I've only really been thinking about it in terms of the fans and roasting the fans. I don't think about it in terms of Scott, but it's like, oh yeah, he probably did have an opinion, didn't he?
If that was my daughter, I'd be like, who the hell is that?
You're
you
not
brought this
up
dog home from the pound. Girl, we're not keeping it in the house.
No.
I didn't sign up to walk this shit.
No, absolutely not.
It wasn't
not.
Fair. It wasn't right.
It wasn't right. So she loves the idea of the enemy. And the enemy sometimes is daddy. The enemy sometimes is daddy. But it's just interesting to me. I mean, she is one of the most powerful women in the entire world. She's in this great place in her life, career, and personal life-wise. But she still kind of has her sword up a little bit. And I think she always will. It's not a commentary on the relationship or on Travis. It's kind of just who she is. She has learned time and time again, I got my fucking sword up. And I'm ready.
It's her experience of life
and
in
I'm
the
ready.
Public eye. How could she ever truly relax? Because it seems as though, and also I'm sure it doesn't help when she puts out an album about being in love and everyone's like, we hate it. Be sad again. I'm sure that doesn't feel good. I'm sure that feels terrible. So yeah, you're the haters. You're the haters. The Swifties can be the haters too. This is the thing. Anyone can hate outside the club, inside the club, above the club, below the club. Like, you really can hate Taylor from every angle. But I will note, and I think we'll see this as we go through, because I kind of talk about that too, there's definitely a progression in the us versus them mentality. And she has grown more adult in her perspective of it. Like, I think she has more awareness that regardless of the haters, she can withstand.
And she does. And that's the gag of it all.
And she does. And I think also it's important to note that, like, when we're talking about Travis here or any of the muses, we're referring to characters on the page. We're working with the information that we have from the lyrics that she's given us over the years. This is not a commentary on their actual relationship in real life, whatever. Right. That's none of our business.
Yeah, we don't do that. Mm-mm. They're kind of like, this is our dollhouse, ladies and gentlemen.
Always as muse. Always as muse.
Muse.
So let's start with ours. Best song ever made. And it actually made me really sad looking back and listening to it because of how hopeful she is. The naivete there is so pure and self-assured. She's so confident that love can conquer all. How can a person know everything at 18 but nothing at 22? She hadn't had that realization yet.
No.
She's like, everyone hates you and my parents hate you and all your ex-girlfriends are trying to kill me, but that's okay because I love you. Did you get the man?
Did you get the man? Did you get the job? Did you get the car? No, you got none of that. But it's one of my favorite things about Taylor. She doesn't care. She does it over and over and over again. She's like, I don't care what anybody says. Should she have been listening? Absolutely. In this specific instance, in ours, she should have been heeding the advice. But if she had, she wouldn't be Taylor. And I'm saying,
and we wouldn't have this.
Right, exactly. And this is what
there wouldn't be this if there hadn't been you. It's starting.
This is one of my all-time favorite Taylor love songs. I think it's really underrated. I don't think it's talked about enough. I love ours. It's so good.
One of her most romantic songs ever, 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 ever. When I was listening to it back and analyzing it, it damn near brought me to tears. I was like, this is not just something they made.
No.
And when I compare the quality of ours to the quality of Daylight and Opalite, I'm shocked. I'm in tears.
I think that ours is really, like, wise. It has one of my favorite Taylor lyrics. And, you know, this is a Taylor lyric that is about a specific situation in her mind, but is so evergreen. People throw rocks at things that shine. That is so true and so wise and so smart and so like, it's like an understanding of the world, and it does make you feel better. You know, sometimes you're having a dark day and you just think to yourself, you know what, people throw rocks at things that shine. Again, were they right to be throwing rocks? Absolutely.
But throw bigger rocks.
But
boulders.
It's one of those lines that, like, I can't believe she wrote this when she was 19.
No, ingenuologist, for real.
Ingenue.
This was a virtuoso. This is Mozart. Like, this, she's not, when people say she needs to revert to, like, folklore and evermore writing, I'm like, you all seem to think that she only got good at songwriting then. Speak Now is on par and sometimes clears what's on folklore and evermore. In terms
Finally.
Of the, like, precision of this songwriting, it is really, like, I feel in Speak Now, there's no wasted space. Every line is intentional. Every word uttered is purposeful. Like, they're long songs, but they almost never feel too long.
No, they're perfect. Speak Now, listen, not to do Speak Now-ology on
do
the
it.
Lyric analysis episode. Speak Now is literally, and this isn't even just an opinion, I think we can all agree this is factual,
fact.
Most underrated Taylor Swift record of all time. It only got one song in the Eras Tour. She barely paid attention to the TV. Must I go on? Underrated.
And the new Swifties don't talk about it. Have you
they
noticed
don't
that? They will talk about Fearless more than they'll talk about Speak Now. It truly is forever the ugly, forgotten stepsister, but never to me.
To us.
This is a top two Taylor Swift album forever and always.
It literally changed the way that my mind worked when I was 17 years old. And I guess if you weren't there, you just wouldn't get it. And many, many people weren't. I was.
I feel like I became a better writer because I have this album in my life.
I'm being serious. For sure. And lest we forget, no editors, no co-writers. Taylor alone wrote this album.
No Max Martin.
Just anybody can say that. In fact, almost no other pop girl off the top of my head can say that.
When she was 19! It's crazy. It's crazy. She's that girl. Okay, anyway. I think that this is one of the first times in her discography I noticed that we see external problems presented in a Taylor Swift relationship through song. Much of the earlier problems were oriented around like a boy behaving badly. If you don't want me to write bad songs about you, shouldn't do bad things. But here she says, it seems like there's always someone who disapproves. They'll judge it like they know about me and you. The thing is that they do.
And you know what? They know him way more than you could ever imagine. It's hard. I try sometimes not to like think about songs in terms of like who they were specifically written about, especially when we're doing sister songs, because it's like it's more about the themes and like the messages. But in this instance, we have to speak up. They were
right. We have to speak now.
We have to speak now. They do know him. You don't even know what you're talking about. I also
for
think
the
it's
record,
interesting.
If you don't know, it's about John Mayer. If you're confused. We didn't say that.
Everybody's supposed to know that. But in the second verse, when she's talking about like ghosts from your past gonna jump out at me, lurking in the shadows with their lip gloss smiles. You're talking about the ex-girlfriends. Oh no, mm-hmm. He has worse ghosts.
Why are
than
they
that.
There?
No. You don't even know about the skeletons he has. You don't even know. But I digress.
Mm-hmm. Her us against the world mentality is definitely something that has poisoned a lot of her relationships, as we mentioned, because it isolates you from your loved ones and the people who care about you. Like if the people that you love are telling you that the person that you're with is terrible, that's not because they're bored. As Taylor would say, the verdict comes from those with nothing else to do. The jury's out, but my choice is you. She's like, he's sentenced to death and I'm saying I love him.
And he should have been sentenced to death. Again, that's what's
we're
not
waiting.
Clicking.
We're
that's
waiting.
What's not clicking. She definitely does like to do, I will throw everything away and I will risk it all for my love. I feel like this is worth it. She's always talking about love being worth it. Love being worth the battle. I'm going to pick my sword up. We're going to fight, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, is it worth like turning your back on your parents?
Your life?
For John Mayer?
Your sanity?
It was.
Your peace?
It was
because we got this. We got all of this. And that was very important. But she's also like really writing this song to defend her love, to say that it's real and to assert that it is strong enough. You're all wrong to withstand something. And it's like pure and sacred to her almost. She writes about love like this a lot, as though it's like a force or a power, a divine thing. Don't you worry your pretty little mind. People throw rocks at things that shine and life makes love look hard. It's funny how the reverse of that became true. Love made her life look really hard for a long time. Gray and blue and fights and tunnels.
Yeah.
Gray didn't
and
need to be
blue
like that
and fights and tunnels.
For just 1 hour of sunshine. Girl.
She didn't know that. But you see, this is the whole thing. I also feel like ours and the other two songs that we're talking about really just kind of like display a core tenet of who Taylor is. This is how she goes into entering into relationships. She's all in. She's loyal. Yes, she goes us versus them. But there's something
this is why she could never be a one-night stand girl. No. She couldn't. She literally couldn't. It's not
she
in her
said,
DNA.
I do not hook up .mp3, Kelly Clarkson.
Whoa.
I fall deep. I fall deep. That's what she said. She is literally willing to lay her life on the line for her partners. She doesn't care what people say. And even when they turn out to be right, and this is like the really important thing, she doesn't really learn the lesson.
Love
you know what I mean?
Her.
No. She will not learn that lesson. She will not turn away from love or like be suspicious. She's not really like, I think she kind of talks about like, I'm trepidatious now. I'm not the same. It's like, I'm not really seeing that girl. I'm seeing the girl who said, I want to marry Maddie Healy. I saw her. She was seen.
Jesus
so,
was seen.
Let's talk
torture
about
poets
that.
Is the return of that mentality. And I think part of why you and I were so invigorated by tortured poets was because we were like, there she is.
The diva.
Like she's still there. That, and it's not that she's sad. That's not what we're attracted to. It's her resilience and it's her ability to dig her goddamn heels in and be a hopeless romantic, because there was nothing to be hopeful about in that situation. It clearly had one way that it was going to end. And if you really think about it, ours can apply to that situation a lot. The Maddie Healy interlude, ours, it's actually like almost identical parallel situations.
And that's the freaky deaky part. It's literally repeating history because she refuses to learn the lesson. She
prophecy
literally head first fearless. every time. That's who she is. Head first, fucking fearless. She speaks now. She's head first, fearless. What was that old Swifty thing where it was like, I'm fearless. And
I'm fearless because I always speak now and everything is red.
That's literally her. That's her.
No, it is. That's literally her. Never let the essence. What is it? Never forget the essence of your spark.
Never forget it's the so essence, true. Essence of your spark.
And I'll never change, but I'll never be the same. That's
exactly. She throws herself into love 100%. And every single time she says the stakes are high, the water's rough. But this love is ours.
No, this is the most beautiful romantic song she's ever written. I'm serious. Like, her belief here in love is so pure. It's a force. It's a momentum that can overcome every challenge. That's so gorgeous and naive. And oh, how life will teach you a different lesson.
Yes, it will. And she won't learn it.
Exactly! This is one of our most demented sister songs.
You know what? But we needed it because normally we're
no,
like,
we needed it.
This is about her, but her heartbreak and oh, you know, jump up. But no. This time we're like,
even though it does get dark, it's gonna get dark. But she keeps listing the challenges as we progress through the song. Of course, the ghost with the lip gloss smiles. Do you hate other women on Speak Now? You did, certainly. And the bridge is where we really start getting into girl. Put your shoes on. We need to find you a home. It's not theirs to speculate if it's wrong. And why were they speculating that your love might be wrong? Perhaps because he's too old for you?
Let's open the case. And maybe we should open up Rolling Stone and take ourselves back to the John Mayer Rolling Stone article and just have a gander at what was said.
Let's just take a little look. One line. From that
it always reminds me of, you know, in Parks and Recreation when Leslie just looks in the camera and goes, stay away from John Mayer.
Exactly. Literally. No, it's so true. It really is so true. Okay, the most romantic line to me, maybe that she's ever written in her discography is, I'll fight their doubt and give you faith with this song for you. I might actually kill myself. Song is like prayer to Taylor Swift. It really is. It's this divine third space that she enters into when she's writing songs. And for Taylor Swift to direct that divine Te Voodoo energy towards writing an incredibly romantic song that's supposed to wrap around you like golden fleece, you must be grateful, rat.
And he wasn't. He completely squandered it away.
Nope.
He's disgusting.
He focused on Dear John and he ignored ours.
No, and it's literally the greatest song ever made.
Better honestly, than anything he's ever written. We know that.
But you know what? Speaking of Dear John, I love that this song has lines that like directly mirror what she says in Dear John when she talks about, I'll look back and regret how I ignored when they said run as fast as you can. It's like, ooh.
Oh, and she still put this on the album.
And she doesn't care.
Because she
That's
knew.
That's my favorite thing about these Taylor albums that used to come out. Like, the relationship would happen and then the breakup would happen before the album came out. So you would get these albums that were like, State of Grace, you know, et cetera, et cetera. These, you know, amazing
Sad,
love songs.
Beautiful, Tragic.
And then she'd be going literally, you know, Red.
I'm gonna die.
Track to Red title track. It's like, oh, I love that. She kept it all on.
I loved
there.
It too. And you know what? She did that with Tortured Poets as well.
Yep.
She said, who else will know you?
You're going to hear both sides. That's why it's an original Taylor record. That's what nobody is getting at. I love how there's no Tortured Poets song, and yet we can't help ourselves.
No, we've been cooking on this lately. I mean, certain things have come to pass, the life of a showgirl, that have made us remember Tortured Poets and miss her.
We reflect. We reflect on her.
yearn, long for her.
Yes, et cetera, et cetera.
Certain things have come to pass. But, you know, Opalite, of course. she says, I love the riddles that you speak. Well, that wouldn't be the last time you love the riddles that someone spoke. They're always lying to you. They're always telling you lies. And you're always saying, I don't care about the 1950 shit they want from me. That's okay. Keep lying.
Keep lying. I don't mind if you keep lying.
Or don't say anything. My face was gravy. Wouldn't admit that we were sick. I also, any snide remarks from my father about your tattoos will be ignored because my heart is yours. Girl.
She didn't give a F-U-C-K.
Rat's fat ass.
She didn't give a rat's fat ass. But my favorite part, one of my favorite parts of the song, I should say, is there's this like battle cry in the outro where she very emphatically informs us they can't take what's ours. And it's like, ooh.
They can't.
And mind
they
you,
can.
When she
they
says
did.
They
can't.
In this context, she's saying my mother. My dad. My mom.
My daddy
and dad
said, "Stay away.
Take what's ours." Are you out of your goddamn mind? But she doesn't care. She.
My mother accused me of losing my mind, and I swore I was fine. I said, "You can't take what's mine.
You can't.
This
you
love
can't.
Is ours.
No, this love is ours." That's literally what her response was to those comments. She said, "Mom, mm-hmm. you don't know him the way that I know him." And Andrea was like, "You? How long have you known him? Like 5 seconds?"
Her mom's like, "I've seen this film before. I've seen this happen to people before. And you know what? I'm not putting down my rock. And he's not that shiny. He really isn't."
But she treated their love in the song as if it was like a weapon that could fight off what other people thought about it, including her own mother. It can beat off the gossip.
I love her. I love her. She's so crazy.
She is so crazy. And that's what makes her one of the greatest songwriters of all time, because she is willing to be humiliating. And the thing is, this song isn't even embarrassing to me. Like, honestly, it's so good that like any chance of it being embarrassing is like completely negated by the fact that it's one of the greatest songs ever made. So yeah,
when
I love
a song
her.
Is that good, you can forget and forgive whoever the muse was about.
Exactly.
The muse only becomes a problem when the song is not that good. Then you're like, "Oh, I'm trying to get into this, but I wasn't really feeling it. And now I'm remembering it's about that
yes.
thing.
And that will
that
pee me.
That person.
PMO.
Superman. Great example. Superman is a great example. I'm coming for you every day for the rest of my life. He'll never be free from us.
No, absolutely not. No, I talk about him today. And like, if people don't know, I let
them
know.
It happened yesterday.
It happened
yesterday.
It's on site.
Mm-hmm. Of them all? He's the one that I really would, if I like approach in public and be like, "Fuck you." Fuck
the thing is,
you. I would recite Dear John to him dead ass.
The fact that I've had the opportunity.
I know. You really missed that. You really.
Well, it's. So, excuse
you should have at least spat
in
his food. Should have at least spat in his food.
I did give him a flat Diet Coke. This is a point of pride for me. My two John Mayer stories that are interesting is, number one, I gave him a flat Diet Coke. Number two, I tried to take a picture of him and the flash went off and he saw me.
I forgot about that one.
It's so
that,
good.
Did he say anything about it, or did he just look at you like, "You're a loser"?
The situation was, we had this thing behind the restaurant. It was called like a mobile bar, and there's a back door open, and then he was at the front window. So there's this perfect view that we had eye contact of each other, and I was like, "Oh, finally, my opportunity!" And I go to take the picture. The flash goes off, and he looks directly at me. Looks at me and then looks away. Used to it, I guess. And I was like,
"What would you
I'm
have done
home.
With that picture? Put it on Twitter and been like, this
proving
guy, this rat.
This
guy
real.
Threw a call it what you want lemonade at me."
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The meme potential of that picture.
It
endless.
Could be everything. Also, if you had just
I'm
gotten him like catching you. With the flash, like if you had just stayed strong and held your phone up and not pulled it away, it would be the world's greatest picture ever.
I want it so bad. Because the eyes
You'll
meeting my
again.
Camera lens.
I'm going to go on John Mayer hunt. When I come to Livingston, Montana, it's on site. I'm there on
an expedition.
We need
to find out where he's going. I need to ask around town. Have you seen John Mayer? Have you seen John Mayer? Where have you seen him recently?
I'm here for the hunt. What yeah. hunt? Oh,
oh,
you don't know.
You
haven't
get
heard.
It. We're
you
hunting a
heard.
Man today, boys. Mm-hmm.
Man hunt. It's a man yeah. hunt. So now that we did our hand heart, it felt good to hand heart, didn't it?
It did.
Didn't it feel good?
I really enjoyed it. And it's about
greatest
to go
songwriter.
Away. It's about to...
Yeah. We're going to lose it. Okay. Worst love song ever written by Taylor Swift. I thought that maybe going back and really, I've never analyzed the lyrics to this before, because the second I heard this song, I knew it was fucking nonsense. And I know people love this song, but when I went back to it, I was like, this song is full of fake news. Let's start there. Fake news. Why is this romantic song about my life is better than ever? I'm the happiest I've ever been. Literally all about my haters. She's addicted to her
Again.
Haters.
Again.
She's addicted Again. To the haters. Every scene that is painted about her relationship with Joe is so loaded and glum on this ostensibly bright and cheery I Love Love album. It's dark.
It is. There's dark parts. Daylight is a dark song. Honestly, mm-hmm. like the first half of it is fairly dark. And then, of course, it builds to like this beautiful, like I get the intention behind the song that like I really do. It starts kind of dark and then she builds it up into But I also have never tried to analyze Daylight. I don't really think about her in my day-to-day life. I was shocked that it's kind of worse the longer you look at it. And yeah. the more you try to parse it, the more it becomes like, I don't want to say convoluted because I think it's really clear what she's trying to do. It's just like there's so
forced
many.
Is the word I think you're looking for.
Yeah.
Forced.
So many dumb little details that she says and like dumb lines. I wounded the good and I trusted the wicked.
That's Tay British. This is when Tay British was out of control. And if you think about the sequencing of the back half of Lover, it's crazy. It's like Afterglow, It's Nice to Have a Friend, and Daylight. That's dark. That is a dark sequence of events. She starts the song about this best time of her life with, my love was as cruel as the cities I lived in. First of all, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't make any sense. Why is she always doing penance? Why is she always owing a debt to this particular muse of hers, but also to her future self, who must be happier than the past self because she was ready to implode? Like, she's always punishing herself when she's singing about this relationship and punishing her past self and all the stupid mistakes that she made. There are so many lines that I've crossed unforgiven. I'll tell you the truth, but never goodbye. That made me laugh out loud. You say I abandoned the ship, but I was going down with it. Handcuffed to the spell I was under. She meant that.
She did. I'll tell you the truth, but never goodbye.
Finally, one day she woke up.
Thank God. Daylight is like, to me, it's like, this is like a crazy thing to say, but it's almost like a fever dream-esque. Like, it's like this delusion. I was speaking from a delusional girl.
Yes, I was speaking from that I often inhabit, that is not true to who I am. She'd say the same thing.
And what bothers me is that, like, you know, before this, like, before Lover came out, she had kind of, like, written about love at, like, it was driving a new Maserati down a dead-end street. You know, this is Where Am I? The Way I Loved You to Red to Daylight Pipeline comes in. She wrote about love like it's supposed to be hard. You're supposed to have to fight. It's supposed, you know, you're mount your steed. You're supposed to feel it so hard it hurts. It's supposed to be screaming and fighting and kissing in the rain. She found it really romantic to write about love like that and also to experience it like that. He wanted it comfortable. I wanted that pain. She meant that. And that's why Daylight rings is so false to me. But let me tell you something. She enjoyed, at least in song, the idea that love is difficult. This love is difficult, but it's so real. Again,
that was the whole thing
again
with her and Joe, specifically, right? Over and over again. Call it what you want. My babies fit like a daydream. Like, you all don't understand how great our love is. You could never get it. You could never understand. And it doesn't matter what you think because I love him. I think she thought at this period of her time that for love to be real and worthy, it had to be hard. Like, it had to be difficult. It had to be like a struggle, and that the reward would be there eventually. But it was kind of like you're looking for the greener grass, but it's not there. I saw fairy lights through the mist.
Kept calm and carried the weight of it. No, literally.
No, it literally.
It's true. This is, and So Long London is kind of like a, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like an unfrittering, you know, like or like
Daylight.
A frittering of Daylight and like a lot of other things. But she wrote Daylight to kind of like shoot down all the stuff that she had been writing about for years in regards to how she wrote about love. She wrote it to kind of say love is not actually supposed to be like that, and now I know that. It's supposed to be bright and happy and light and not hard and easy and simple. And it's supposed to make sense. But did it? Did it?
Did you get the job?
Did you get the freaking job? Maybe there's no right answer.
She also has this compulsion to disavow her past constantly. I don't want to look at anything else now that I saw you sleeping so long on a 20-year dark night. It's like, okay, relax. Like, we don't need to be rehashing the mistakes that we made all the time. Like, you don't need to feel guilty for having lived a life before you found this love. And I think by contrast, Opalite handles the past very differently. Like, it's a thing that happened, not some sort of like clue or riddle that spells out the future if she doesn't amend it properly.
That's really interesting because she does it all the time. Even the happiest songs, like Invisible String. Hell was a journey, but it brought me heaven. And it's like she's always, you know, greatest song ever made. Cold was the steel of the axe to grind for the boys that broke my heart. We need to know about that. We wanted the steel to be ground. Like, let's be clear. But I do think it's interesting. I wonder if she feels compelled, not even by like her boyfriends or the relationships, but like by the outside pressure of people being like, well, didn't you say X? Didn't you say Y? And she has to be like, that was all fake. It was a farce. This is real now.
She feels the need to clarify. That's what Eldest Daughter is to me. That's the purpose of the song. Is she's like obsessed with clarifying something. And does it get clarified? Well, she just wanted to say that I lied about wanting to get married. And it's like, okay, did you have to do all that?
And we already covered that.
We knew it.
We knew
Opalite it. Opalite literally covers that, babe.
Yep.
It so literally says, also that pre-chorus for the second verse, you guys hate each other. Ran with the wolves, refused to settle down, stormed out of every single room in this town, threw out our cloaks and our daggers. Girl, whatever happened to this guy being Opalite?
Yeah, I don't, this is the part of the song that gets stuck in my head because I like the melodic flow.
Maybe you
of
ran
it.
With the wolves and refused, refused to settle down.
That's the only part of the song I really like. But when you think about the lyrics, it's like, what does that mean? Maybe you ran with the wolves and refused to settle down. Wasn't he like 25?
Yeah. So he was just being a guy. Okay. Thank you. Boring flop. Four stupid. I hate the outro. It's golden like daylight. Wrong. It's actually Opalite.
Wrong. Wrong. It's actually Opalite. The thing about daylight that really kind of PMO is like, I think that she knows, and she knew then, she knows now, that love obviously isn't supposed to be painful, fight for your life. But I don't believe that, like, I just think, like, daylight is so ham-fisted. This metaphor, like a forced metaphor of love being like daylight and stepping into the sunshine, and it's all so easy. It's not really like that either. So, like...
No, and I think also she wanted to... My kind of tin hat theory is that she really wanted to call the album Daylight. So she wrote a song that would reflect the mission statement of the album. I think Lover was just a song that she wrote, and it ended up being a really good song. And someone, by the grace of God, intervened and said... I remember she literally said someone told her that Daylight was too much. It was like too forced of an idea to make the album title, and that Lover was better. But Daylight, like Eldest Daughter, speaks to me as a song that was written for a purpose, to clarify something. It didn't come out of like a genuine idea. It was like a forced right. idea.
No, she wanted to say it's not burning red anymore. And she was wrong for
that's
that.
That's what she wanted. Yeah, it's not burning red. It's golden like daylight. She thought that was the most clever. It's like when she did Please Don't Ever Be a Stranger Whose Laugh I Could Recognize. She was like, that's the line of the millennium.
And it wasn't. It never is. It never is.
But that is better than it's golden like daylight. That it is better than
it's
that.
And golden.
It is better than I'm not a bad bitch. This isn't Savage. Certainly. Daylight is a better song than that. Let me tell you that for free.
Well, and the other thing about Daylight is she never really expresses what it is about this love that makes it daylight or makes it so special. She never really gets into
that's
that.
That's because she's in hell. It's because it sucks.
By contrast, she does kind of do that in Opalite. She talks about we'll support each other. We're going to be there for each other, storm inside, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll get into all that when we get into it. But she doesn't do any of that here. She just said, now everything's good. Why?
Even Why? Lover is like, can I go where you go? It's not like, let's go somewhere together. It's like, can we always be this close? It's very anxious. It's anxious attachment. It's like, I found you, and now I really want to keep you. Whereas with Opalite, it's like, we're together. We're in it together. This
right,
storm,
yeah,
it's a storm in a teacup.
You know, on Showgirl, she's not really doing a lot of that, like, I need you, I can't, except for an Elizabeth Taylor, but that's for the cuntitude.
That's camp.
That's camp.
For
like,
the cuntitude
that's a different
of it all.
Thing.
She's not
Otherwise,
being serious.
She's not talking about, like, oh my God, if I ever lost you, I'd never walk. She's not doing that because she's Mm-mm. like, so that's
she's
daylight.
Like,
you see how that works?
You
so
see how that works.
What it's all about.
Opalite. This song, to me, the biggest difference between this and like all the other songs about love in her catalog is that it very directly treats the past as a thing that happened, not an antagonist haunting her currently that she has to conquer or fight or bat away. And we get right into it. She addresses it directly. I had a bad habit of missing lovers past. My brother used to call it eating out of the trash. She's dismissing her past as funny, as a joke. It's not that serious. There's no prophecy. It's like in Holy Ground. The story's got dust on every page. You know,
mm-hmm. it's not
I'm
that
skipping
serious.
Over it.
And I like what she says next. She references ghosts. You know, oh, my house used to be haunted. It's full of ghosts, et cetera, et cetera. And I like that she also talks about ghosts and ours in the same way. In both songs, they represent ex relationships. In Opalite, it's her ex-boyfriends. In ours, it's his ex-girlfriends. But I think it's really interesting that, like, with Torture Poets being the most recent album, she specifically calls both Maddie and Joe ghosts on that record. I feel like this is just a nod about how I think it was really deliberate to use that word ghosts. Like, you know, Joe was a ghost and Maddie was a ghost. And now I have a real sentient, you know, corporeal man in front of me. And I'm clapping and I'm cheering. Now my house is no
and
longer
it's
haunted.
Real.
It's an exorcism. Ladies and gentlemen.
And it was needed.
Thank
was needed.
God. it was so neat.
I also interpreted the ghost line as that, but I kind of viewed it a little bit as a callback to The Archer as well. I wake in the night, I pace like a ghost, The room's on fire, invisible smoke. Because it's not just her exes that are haunting her in all of these songs. It's also the prior versions of herself, like roads she could have taken. We know those things kind of haunt her. And I think that she tends to take the road less traveled and think about what she could have done when she's not actively happy. And here she's not imagining what could have been. She's not pining after someone. She's not wishing that he would write mine on her upper thigh. She's simply being like, we did it, Joe.
She's not
saying, we didn't do it, Joe. We did it, Travis.
Deep portal, time travel, all the love we unraveled and the life I gave away. She's not saying that. No, she said, I release it. I release the life I gave away. I release
it's inappropriate.
It. It's inappropriate. So then she says, all of the foes and all of the friends have seen it before, they'll see it again. This is a lyric that kind of pisses me off because I find it to be a really clunky way of saying everyone, haters and friends alike,
have watched
me bungle.
The haters just have to be there. They're always there.
She just likes the alliteration of it. All of the foes and all of the friends. It's like, we get it. Everybody knows that she has fucked it all up every single time. But I love when she compares her love life to a song. I love that so much. Because it's very
clever.
Like because
too.
She's essentially saying all of this, it seems like it's just fodder for songs. And what do songs do? Eventually they end. Just like my relationships ultimately do. But maybe I was wrong. Maybe
the song goes on forever.
Maybe it can never stop. It's very romantic.
I would love to see it.
It's
Andrea Swift makes a triumphant return as the voice of reason. My mama told me it's all right. You were dancing through the lightning strikes, sleepless in the onyx night, but now the sky is opalite. Thank you, Andrea Swift, for providing essential Tay therapy services because no one else is doing it. And it's so true. Taylor, relax. Give yourself a break. You were literally life. What is that quote you always used to say? Life isn't about something through the storm. It's like dancing through the rain. Like that's what you were doing, Taylor. You literally have to kiss a few frogs to get to your prince. And it's nice that she's able here to summarily dismiss all of that instead of holding on to it and bringing it to her new relationship. It's like, it's okay. You did that.
Yeah. That's something that I really like about the song is that it as opposed to Daylight and as opposed to Ours, where it feels like there's like a clinging, like a holding on to, Opalite feels very like, she even says, it's all right. It's okay. We don't have to feel bad about it. We don't have to dissect it. We don't have to, you know, shiver. Like, we can just let it go. We were dancing through the lightning strikes. Honestly, I like when she says dancing through the lightning strikes too, because it's like, we made it through it. Like, we did it. We've done it before.
We dodged.
Yeah, exactly. We dodged it. It's very like, the imagery that she's presenting is very like, happy. And like, ooh, we're you know, fighting it off and we're doing so good. It's cute.
Opalite, if this was really marketed correctly as the Lover 2.0 record, Opalite would have been a great name for the record.
Yes. Opalite would have been a great name for the record. And it would have been absolutely Gorgina, the packaging, you know, like
the
getting
music
to
video,
like...
video, if it was the first single...
Oh, it would have been absolutely gorgeous. It would have been absolutely gorgeous. Well, we would have had a really fun time with that because Opal is our birthstone. Not many people know that. We don't mention it a lot.
I have an Opal ring.
Not many people know that.
I never wear it because it's set in gold. I got to get it reset in silver. But yes, you're right. Opal is our birthstone. I forgot that. And you know what? It's unlucky for everyone else except us.
Except us.
And Taylor Swift. Well, you see, she's doing Opalite. Not Opal. She knows.
Right.
She knows. So yeah, thank you, Andrea Swift. I really like the analogy of love also being something that you make, not a punishment to which you are sentenced or an accident that just happened. It's an intention that you create with someone else and you joyfully build together. And the part of it that I really like is I've never made no one like you before. I had to make your own sunshine, but now the sky is opalite. You did the best with what you had and now you actually have the best.
Right. It's kind of like there's something about opalite that's very like, this is what happens when you don't give up, you know, like, and Taylor, like we were talking about earlier, she never does give up. Every time she gets her heart broken, she says, okay, well, that was terrible, but you know what? I'm not going to let it stop me from falling in love again. And at a certain point, you really do deserve to reap the rewards of ceaseless belief in the idea of love. Like, don't you just like karmically deserve to find somebody who's going to actually do all the things that they said they were going to do at a certain point? Well, yes, you do. So thank you, Taylor, for reminding us that if you stick to it and you don't give up and you dance through the lightning strikes, one day you too can find, you know, the person of your dreams, et cetera, et cetera.
It's inspiring. And you know what? The reason why she gets into relationships very quickly after, you know, one dissolves is because otherwise we're in the prophecy. That's a dark, scary place to be. She doesn't like to be there.
She hates it there. She hates it there.
It has to be.
She was begging to get out of there.
Then she briefly tours us through Travis's relationship woes of the past. He felt that he was active and present. His partner was an influencer. You know, that there's references made to that. And she wasn't, in his eyes, also an active present partner. She's really doing Tay philosophy here when she connects his invisible string to hers. Don't we both, you know, we both try to love, love. We give it all you've got. You finally left the table. And what a simple thought. You're starving till you're not. Finally, some good food, some good writing.
Right. And what a simple thought. You're starving till you're not.
That's profound.
It's profound. It's profound.
It wants to be people throw rocks at things that shine, but it can't.
It could never be. It could never be. Absolutely Mm-mm. never be. I like, though, in some ways, Opalite does kind of like mirror ours, but she does kind of like in both songs kind of like posit love as a sort of like shelter from the storm in some way or another. Like in ours, they fight off judgment and doubt with love, but in Opalite, They're like fighting off the trials and tribulations of life in general by supporting one another. And that's something that's like really different. It's not just like everybody's saying that we have to break up and I'm shielding us from the evil outside world. It's more like it's normal in life to go through things that are really hard. But you know what? This is a partnership and I'm going to support you and you're going to support me. And when you fail, like you inevitably will, and I will too, I'm going to be there. That's all it means.
I agree. And the bridge is very cute. It's very romantic. And she's saying, no matter what challenges life will throw at us, we will be able to handle it because our foundation is strong. Not we're going to band together and fight like thieves and cowboys for it. Like we're actually just going to normal people, like deal with the problems as they come, no matter what they may be. A storm inside a teacup. Shelter here with me, love. Thunder like a drum. This life will beat you up. It's true. And also, true. This is just a temporary speed bump. Failure brings you freedom and I can bring you love. This to me is, can I go where you go? Can we always be this close? But like, healthy version.
Right, exactly. It's more like, I want to say like, adult and like grown up to just be like, you are going to be the person who's there when I really need somebody to be there. And I'm going to be exactly that for you. And I also love when she says, but I can bring you love. Like, this is what I'm bringing and this is what I'm giving you. And some days that's going to be enough. I really do think. And it's going to like get us through a lot of really hard times that are completely separate from our relationship. Just like, you know, when you lose the game, maybe. Mm-hmm. Many such
I
cases.
Mean, opposite. It reminds me of, would it be enough if I could never give you peace? Because peace is all about how her love is not enough. That's right. Simply, it's not enough to withstand the specific challenges of that relationship. Whereas here, she's like, I'm bringing you love. And you already feel that that's enough. So I just want to remind you of it, that like whenever we hit a temporary speed bump, like, you know, you got me in your back pocket.
Right. And there's something so like freeing. And think about things that she says. Remember in So Long London when she says, when you're not sure if he wants to be there? When you know that somebody wants to be there for you and you know that they want to spend time with you and you're the first person that they think of when they get good news, when they get bad news, when something really good happens, when they're happy, when they're sad, you're the first person that comes into their head. That is like the most relaxing feeling in the world, just to know that that person exists. Mm-hmm. And when you don't know that, like in So Long London, it's like torture. So to see like
or
that
when you are that, when someone is that for you, but you're not that right. for them, that's extremely right. painful.
Right. So this in this song, it's kind of like we are each other's person. I mean, simply put. Mm.
Yeah. The Tavises really need to lay the fuck off because we're Tavising hard. I was just
and
thinking
you know what?
This.
We do more often than not. That's what I
this
don't
is the
understand.
Thing. But they just micro-analyze like one comment ever. They just pick like one. It's like you have to, it's North Korea. You have to literally follow the supreme leaders. And if you don't, you're going to get beaten with a stick.
Well, there's, you know
not
what?
Me. I'm defective.
We Tavis plenty. We mm-hmm. Tavis plenty. Okay?
More than we ever towed.
Oh, way more than we, let me tell you something.
We weren't towing.
I remember reading some of the takes that people would say about Joe and like, oh my God, Nimi. And I would be like, you guys don't know anything about the relationship or him.
No. when they say we want Joe back, we want Joe back. The thing that maddens me most of all is Joe wrote her best songs. Like, I can't.
No, that's not real.
I can't.
Enough.
No, we can't.
Enough. Mm-mm. Enough. Thank you.
They're not accusing Travis of writing these songs.
Hell no. And thank
and
God.
And maybe they should.
That was something that I said when they first started dating. Not when they first started dating, but like after they had been dating for like a little while. Like, oh, this is going to be like a long-term relationship. I was like, you know what? At least we know Travis will never say, can I come in and write a little something? He would never say that. Thank God.
I remember in an interview recently, someone was like, was Travis singing backup? And Taylor was like, as if it was the craziest thing in the world. She was like, no.
I bet you Travis is like the worst singer ever.
Yeah.
Can't you just tell by looking at him as he should
be? Stay out of women's business.
Yeah.
Singing is for women.
Women's business. Stay out of women's business. Any other questions?
Well, I think we cooked hard. That was one of our greatest ever episodes. I think that you guys should leave a comment and let us know what sister songs you would like to see. I did something that Madeline found confusing. I said, Invisible, You Belong With Me and Ruin the Friendship. And she said, but I'm saying there's something
I was thinking about it. I was, I was considering. I was like,
We could throw Forever Winter in there also.
We could throw Teardrops on My Guitar in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Let's open the case.
Get all the girls. Let's get everybody in there at that point.
This is the problem with sister songs. We're like, let's do, I don't think we've ever successfully just done two.
No. Ever. Because we there's can. Always like a, there's always a bitch in the wings. Because there's so much delicious
songs.
Food to get into. And I'm saying we're the luckiest people alive.
Imagine trying to do sister songs as a recurring series with like Lorde. You're done after like a month.
You're done. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
You're done. That's it. It's going to finish.
Yeah.
So thank you, Taylor. Oh, the only people you could do this with, I guess, are like the Beatles.
And
but you don't see anyone doing
that. I'm not going to be doing that. And I don't think anybody else should be doing it either. And if you are doing it, stop.
If Kel does it, we'll look away. But other than that.
Oh, yeah. Kel can do Paul McCartney behaviors. That's none of my business.
But that's it.
But yeah. Otherwise, keep that to yourself.
If you want to hear more Evolution of a Snake, patreon.com/swiftologist, it's the place to be. I don't know what else to tell you. You're missing out. It's loserific to not be there. Oh, Madeline, you should plug your great episode of The Lizard Review that is public and just came out. Tell us what it's
about. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go to Spotify or thelizardreview.substack.com, if you want the video version, I can't figure out how to get the videos on Spotify. That's my technical issue. Don't worry about that. You just mind your business. But if you go on to Spotify, you can stream my new episode that is simply titled No, Taylor Swift is Not a Trad Wife. And I think lots of people want to click.
It's a treatise.
Lots of people want to click. It's a treatise. No, it's something for the people. You know, it's kind of like when Moses appeared with the Ten Commandments.
I was thinking you need to put that on YouTube, and it also needs to be cut up and put on TikTok because so many people need to hear this message. It's like
many
if
people.
You ever felt compelled by Taylor MAGA, Taylor Tradwife, listen to this episode and all of your fears will dissipate. Let Madeline
set you
straight.
It's important. So I beseech you to press play on it. Thank you.
We beseech you, and we'll see you in the next episode.